Wait, Ethan, we have a podcast?
I think we do.
Oh, shoot. Dang it. We better record one. All right. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. I apologize for not having the last two episodes out after the two absolutely super exciting weekends of racing on the Biathlon World Cup. That was totally my bad. I was on the road at the IBU Cup in Idra and Shushan, and I just was so busy I couldn't find time to meet. So that is my bad, but we will recap all the action that happened in the second weekend of Östersund, the week in Hochfilzen, and then another exciting and absolutely gorgeous weekend in Lenzerheide, Switzerland. But as always, my co-host Ethan is here. Ethan, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to talk about this first trimester here.
I am too. It was really exciting biathlon, and I'm bummed that we missed or that we couldn't find time to meet these last couple of weeks because there's so much to talk about. But we'll try to talk about as much as we can here within the allowed time. I don't know how long our recording software is going to allow us to record, but we'll try to talk about as much biathlon as we can. What do you say? You want to just dive right into it here?
Let's do it.
So our first hit, actually just absolutely great head-to-head races in the first three stops of the World Cup. In Östersund, we had Franziska Preuß, who unfortunately twice lost out on winning a race by less than a second, almost less than half a second. But notably in Östersund, in the pursuit, she went to the line head-to-head with Lou Jeanmonod and just barely lost out. Lou getting her first win on the World Cup, which is awesome. Hochfilzen, we had Lena Hecky Gross toe-to-toe with Ingrid Landmark Tandervold and took her to the house, getting second place. I think that was like tied for her best result ever on the World Cup. She's never won a race, but she's coming second now a couple times, I believe. And then now in Lenzerheide, the men's pursuit, it didn't go down to the finish line like those other two events. But in the final standing stage, just tons of athletes on the range, still within striking distance of winning the race. And this is just clean, awesome biathlon. What do you think?
I mean, it's so fun to watch. I think coming into this season, we kind of expected this from the women's side, where it'd be super close just about every race. But on the men's side, it's been a lot closer than I think anyone could have expected. And it's made for some super exciting races.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about the standings in a minute. But I mean, like last year, it was just Norwegian dominance. And looking at the standings right now, you would just assume it's the same old story. And again, we'll go into more detail in a minute. But like, I think it's been really cool that there hasn't been that same dominance that they had last season. And really going into any race, you can't just assume that it's going to be someone from Norway. And hell, you can't even just assume it's going to be Johannes Tingas Bo winning the race like you could last year. So I think that's been super exciting. It's really shook up the results. The standings are really interesting when you dive deeper into the stats. But then, yeah, also on the women's side, I mean, the women's side is like, it seems like every weekend you're getting just an absolute wild card of a person, a wild card of an athlete who's just having a great week. So yeah, it's causing, or it's creating these really tightly packed, awesome results. And honestly, as I say that, the only weird result or standout, you know, dominant performance was Justine Brezat in the sprint. I think even in the pursuit and mass starts in Lenzerheide, she won the races, but it wasn't like, you know, absolute, total, and utter dominance. But in the sprint, like, I think maybe 1 minute back was like 10th place. And then like, it seemed like the top 10 was really spread out in the Lenzerheide sprint. But other than that, all the races have just been so close.
Mm-hmm. And in the women's side, it's exciting to see someone, you know, almost it seems like every weekend someone new comes in and throws down and dominates everyone. And if that goes on for the whole season, you know, we could see tons of new athletes coming to light and different athletes wearing the yellow bib. And that could also make for the Globes at the end of the season super highly contested. And I think so far what we've seen only makes me more excited for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have 9 stops on the World Cup. The World Championships doesn't count for the points, unfortunately. So we have 8 stops on the World Cup. And if we get a different athlete every single weekend to have just an absolutely dominant weekend, we could have 8 athletes fighting for the overall come Soldier Hollow in Canmore. Could be really exciting.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also super fun to see athletes like Tandrevald and like Brizard Boucher and Luzar Monod that you mentioned earlier, athletes that we've kind of been waiting to take that next step right away at the start of the season and hopefully be able to carry it out throughout the entire season.
And you know what's actually really interesting, and I talked a lot with the U.S. IBU Cup coach because we were watching the World Cup, and so many of these names that we see who are doing really well right now, particularly on the women's side, like Knoten, like Arnkilev, like Skogen, like Hedich Walsh, Marta Janssen, like so many, Sophie Chaveau, so many of these names are past IBU Cup top 10 athletes. So those who follow the sport really closely and go down into the IBU Cup results to see who the next up and coming athletes are, it's kind of crazy to see how these athletes, they had a couple years of development on the IBU Cup, and now they are emerging as some of the favorites on the World Cup. So it's just really cool. We are sort of commenting like, if you just woke up in 2023 and you just looked at a World Cup result today, it would be kind of hard to tell if it was an IBU Cup result or a World Cup result, just with some of the names who are up there these days. Because these are athletes who are all, yeah, dominating on the IBU Cup just last year or the year before. I mean, and that's what the IBU Cup is there for, right? It's a developmental step for athletes who aren't quite on the World Cup yet. But it's just so cool to see that these athletes who have been, you know, doing well down there are now doing well up on the World Cup for sure. All right, we got a miss, and there's going to be a whole YouTube video coming out about this because kind of crazy, but we had some safety violations in Lenzerheide, and both of them coming from the Norwegian camp. First of all, and I have mixed feelings about this, so I'm curious to hear what you think. We have the situation in the men's pursuit where Endre Strømsheim, another name who's been dominating on the IBU Cup, finally gets some World Cup experience, and now he's in the fight for his first ever podium on the World Cup with the Bo brothers, two of the biggest names in biathlon. And what does he do? He fumbles his magazine in his last standing stage. Or no, he was fighting with Bo in Ligrid, I'm sorry. But anyway, he fumbles his magazine in the last stage, drops over the firing line, and he takes off his skis, puts his rifle down, reaches down to grab his mag, stands back up, skis on, mag in the rifle, cleans his target, and then was able to out-ski Ligrid to second place. And I don't know, like, it's kind of interesting because he's being celebrated a lot, particularly by the IBU. The IBU has come out with a ton of content about this whole situation, like, yeah, celebrating him for his quick thinking and his, you know, willingness to win and his, like, staying, you know, level-headed and hitting the targets when it counted against this adversity. But he broke a pretty fundamental safety rule, and I just don't know how to feel about it. Because on one hand, I totally agree. I think it's crazy. It's drama. It's exciting. But on the other hand, I feel like it sets a bad example for, you know, the local club skier at home who sees this and now they think anything is fair game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think this is so hard for me because that, like, rule number one when you're starting biathlon is don't cross the firing line under any circumstances, any situation. Like, if you drop your magazine, put your hand up, your coach or race official will get you what you need. And yeah, it might take longer to get that magazine and those rounds from your coach or and the race official, but crossing the firing line puts yourself at risk and it could put others at risk. And it's just, you know, I'm glad that, you know, he's okay and he was able to have a good round of shooting, but I don't know, it just doesn't sit well, and I'm not a huge fan of the IBU kind of celebrating an act like that.
Yeah, and it's one thing to, like, listen, I understand in all professional sports levels, like, what he did was safe. I mean, he opened the bolt, he put it down, he put his rifle down, not pointing at anyone. He didn't, like, go in front of his rifle or anything. So, like, there was never an instance where it's like, oh my God, he's pointing a rifle at himself or, like, you know, anything like that. And I understand that at the highest level of all sports, officials will be a little bit more lenient, you know, even in, like, American football and the NFL, for example, you know, there might be some calls that or some plays that don't get penalty calls where down at maybe the high school level, you know, they might call a penalty or a foul because, you know, you want athletes to play the sport fairly. And at the highest level, you get a little bit more leniency. I totally understand that. That's true at all sports. But it's one thing to let it slide and just be like, hey, next time, you know, you really got to raise your hand and get the new mag. But it's another thing to, like, celebrate it. And I've just seen so much content about it. And, you know, this is like, yeah, like you said, one of the fundamental safety aspects of a biathlon range is don't cross the firing line when the range is open. And I would hate for an athlete, particularly a young athlete, who sees this instance and is like, wow, that's so cool, so funny. And then next time they come to the range, they drop their sunglasses over the firing line or drop their mag over the firing line. And they think it's cool to just, I'm going to really quickly just, like, reach over or hop down while, you know, the teammate next to them is shooting and something tragic happens. So I think it's a little reckless on the part of the IBU, to be honest, to be celebrating it so much. All right. So the second safety violation that we saw in Lenzerheide was Sturlaholm Lagride was currently ranked third in the World Cup overall. He was barred from participating in the mass start due to a safety violation that happened back at the hotel room, where apparently he shot around, I assume through a wall, during dry fire or rifle maintenance or something like that. And this is just another absolutely fundamental rule of biathlon safety and dry firing and handling your rifle back at the house or back at the lodging. You got to make sure your magazines are unloaded. Like, step number one to dry fire is double check that your mags are unloaded. And I think it's really good that the IBU put their foot down and, you know, really set the example. It doesn't matter that Lagride was ranked third overall. He dropped now that he lost that opportunity to gain points. Doesn't matter that he's fighting for the overall. If you commit a really, really bad safety violation like that, you're gonna face the consequences.
And I think what makes this so intense is that people in the biathlon world aren't the only ones put at risk. Anyone walking down the street or anyone who could have been in the room next to him is then at risk. And that's what's scary about it too. As an athlete, you get so into the habit of racing, going home, doing what you need to do, dry firing, getting ready for the next day, working on what could have happened in the previous day's race. And, you know, you hear stories of this happening. So this is definitely by far not the first time this has ever happened. But yeah, it's one of the core safety values in biathlon, just like not crossing the firing line. And you hate to see it happen, but in reality, it does happen. And I think the IBU took the right steps in not allowing him to race, even if it did hurt my fantasy biathlon team. But I do support their decision.
Yeah. And quick fun fact here, I was doing some research, you know, for a potential YouTube video. The only time that Andrea Henkel had ever been disqualified from an event was for the exact same reason, actually, at World Championships, oh, maybe 2005 or 2006, I forget exactly. She won the sprint, and was not allowed to start with bib number one in the pursuit because that night she had the same incident where she shot a bullet through a wall, dry firing, and they did not allow her to race. So that's, you know, it just, it's good that they hold athletes' feet to the fire on this, because you're right. Like, yeah, you're not, I mean, we don't want to put anyone at risk, regardless of whether or not they're in the biathlon community. But yeah, it's just really, really good that they're holding this rule. They're upholding this rule. Said I went offline for a second. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I said I went offline for a second. Yeah, and just also to give reference too, I mean, dry fire is so common in our sport. I mean, most elite athletes, like, dry fire 30 minutes a day, sometimes an hour a day, is just part of the daily routine. So it's not like this is like, oh, he, what was he doing messing around with his rifle back at the hotel room? Like, this is just a part of the daily routine for so many athletes. So, you know, it's just like a law of large numbers. The more you handle the rifle, the more likely that an accident is to occur. So it just, yeah, it's a good reminder that safety has to be the number one priority, and not just for rule's sake, but yeah, for like health and wellness sake as well. All right, so we got some new stars that are making their way to the mainstream here in biathlon. Some stars that neither of them I had on my biathletes to look out for list. But number one, Justice, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it looks like Justice Strello from Germany was one of our first overall bib yellow bib wearers, and yeah. Good athlete, had good shooting in one of the early individuals to, you know, claim our top spot. And then also this most recent weekend, we had Merit Skogen from Norway, who quickly is rising in the overall ranking after a great weekend in Lenzerheide. So yeah, cool to see, and more particularly on the women's side, but really cool to see some new names that are just skyrocketing up to the top of the field.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, this happens every year and you're never really going to be able to predict who it is. Or you can always claim you saw it coming, but I think I have never heard of Skogen, the Norwegian woman you just mentioned, until this past weekend. But it seems like countries like Norway, Sweden, and Germany just, you know, find these athletes, pull them up from the IBU Cup, and boom, they're instantly competing for podiums and race wins and yellow bibs. And it's exciting that something like this happens just about every season.
Here's why you've never heard of Skogen. She's only ever done three IBU Cup races. She has a little bit more Junior Cup and Junior World Championship experience. She's only ever raced three IBU Cup races. And then this year she got the nod to start in Östersund, gets her first top 10 in her very first race, floating around like the 20s to 30s, and then boom, out of nowhere, Lenzerheide, sixth place, and then third in the pursuit. So in only her, seventh World Cup race ever, she's on the podium. Kind of crazy. Like, I don't think no one could have predicted or saw her coming, because she wasn't even a factor on the IBU Cup in the last couple of years.
That's crazy. And I don't think that's the standard path or the common path people take. But we were wondering what the Norwegian women's team would look like this year, and turns out it's almost as good as ever.
Yeah, I'll say. And then with Justice Strello, does have some IBU Cup experience and quite a bit of World Cup experience as well. But this year he's really made a big step up. Good shooter, 93% on the season so far, but just a little bit of an improvement on the skiing has been enough to really have him see his best season by far, especially placing second. Yeah, again, second in the season opener with one miss. But yeah, looking at the rest of the field, anyone else in like the top 30 for the men or the women that's a complete surprise name for you?
I'm just scrolling through here.
I'm thinking of like Vibjorn Sørum, kind of like Skogen, where, you know, he's been on the IBU Cup a little bit, but now he's obviously another Norwegian to just show absolute dominance. I look at someone like Lavaro Planko from Slovenia. He's a guy who's been on the World Cup for a little bit, but never anywhere close to the top 30.
Mm-hmm. On the women's side, there's an Estonian. Oh gosh, I'm going to say their name wrong.
I think it's Tuli Tuomela.
Okay.
Yeah.
17th overall on the, you know, on the women's side. I think that's, I had never heard of her before today. She's got to be over the moon with her start for the World Cup season.
For sure. And then also Ukraine. And I didn't realize this. Ukraine had 4 women in the mass start in Lenzerheide. 4 women. There's only 30 starts. And they had 4 of them. That's kind of crazy. Like, I mean, Ukraine's always been, I feel like for me, Ukraine's always been like the best of the rest, right? Like they're not Sweden, Norway, Germany, France, but they have strong enough results that they're better than like the US, Canada, Czech, some of these other nations. But I'm willing to bet that they had one of the highest levels of participation in the women's mass start with 4. That's pretty crazy. And then their current leader, best one on the team in 26th place, is Irina Petrenko. I don't know much about her, unless that's a former athlete who got married and changed her name. I don't know too much about her results. So she's definitely someone who's kind of come out of nowhere in the top 30 for me.
Yeah, it's good to see Ukraine, you know, like you said, back to their level of competitiveness with everything politically that's been going on in the world the past few years.
Sure.
But they've always been a consistently good team on the men's and women's side, which, you know, it's good to have them back, I'd say.
Absolutely. All right, so let's dive a little bit deeper into this women's field here because it's been so exciting. We have 4 women at the top of the field that are all within a win of first place. Now, obviously, it doesn't work that way because second place gets X amount of points, and so there's always going to be a fight. But there's 4 women at the top of the field that are within 90 points of the lead. And that is just, in my opinion, so very exciting. And I really like how each one of these women are from a different nation. And then even below that, the 5th woman is also from a different nation. It's just so cool to see such diversity at the top of the field.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the Unreal Biathlon, looking at the flags in the women's ranking compared to the men's ranking is vastly different, to say the least, which is super awesome to see. And I think not only makes the individual races exciting and something to look forward to, but also the team relay events, where it seems like just about any team has a chance because every team has an athlete towards the top. Every team then has an athlete in that next pack. If you keep going down, the diversity of nations is still super duper high. And I mean, even there's athletes that are kind of in what you would call like the field where they're around top 10, just outside the top 10, like Hanna Oberg, Mona Brosen, and some other athletes in there that, you know, you would expect to be a little higher up in the World Cup ranking. And I expect them to make a push towards the top for the rest of the season. But the competitiveness in the women's field is so high right now.
Yeah, it's making picking relay teams for women's relay really hard because, yeah, sure, France has 3 in the top 10 right now. And 3 really strong women, with their 4th being Chavot in 21st. Norway has 2 in the top 10. Everyone else has 1. I guess Germany has 2 in the top 10. Italy has 1. Sweden, believe it or not, only has one, but then Sweden has 11, 13, and 15. So they're right there. Norway has 12 and 14. So they're right there. Like, picking a team for the women's relay is really hard right now. And it seems like, and this is just my opinion, it seems like we haven't had that just like all out, just head to head, like bone crushing women's relay yet. It seems like each day there's at least one or two teams that kind of, you know, miss the mark a little bit, whether it's with a bad shooting stage, like in Östersund, Lou Jeanmonod had some penalty loops. So France was out of it. Sweden always kind of does poorly at home. So Sweden was a little bit out of it. I want to see that day where every single person is just totally on and it's just all out head to head, like coming into the final leg. And there's still like five teams that could win the race. Like that would probably be the most exciting biathlon race, definitely most exciting relay ever.
That would be awesome. I don't know if we'll ever truly get to see that, but I hope it happens every World Cup weekend. And looking in the next two World Cup weekends coming back after the Christmas holiday break, there's a men's and a women's relay in Oberhof and Ruhpolding. So we might get some chances to see some pretty exciting relays there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned Hanna Oyberg, because she would be, when I look at the World Cup standings graph, we have four athletes that are fighting for the top. We have six athletes that are sort of in this chase group that are a little bit behind, but they're all really close together. Very small separation to what I would consider just the rest of the field. Hanna Oyberg is that first person who is leading that field group, and she's an 11th overall. I would say out of everyone else from 11th up, she is the one, maybe also Doro, Marketa Davidova. Of those three, I'd say they're the big three that I'm kind of a little disappointed they're not in the top 10 right now. Big enough names that I think should be up there. But everyone else that I look at in the top 10 is like, yeah, go for it. You're a top 10-er. Like, let's fight. Lena Hecki-Gross, 9th place overall. That's a great start for the season for her. Just a lot of names. There's too many names, too many people to fit into the top 10, basically.
I think if we tried to pick the top 10, we could go through 15 to 20 different athletes that have a shot of making the top 10.
Yeah, absolutely. And really cool to see Anna Maria Lampich in 20th right now. Look out, biathlon world. She's coming. She's cracked the top 20 and, you know, her next milestone, top 10, maybe.
She can only go up from here.
Yeah. Doro's a little frustrating. I don't know. I would say it's frustrating if you look at her results, because you're like, you know, you want her to be in the top 10, but I've been kind of predicting her demise for a couple seasons now. Her shooting is at an all-time high, which is funny because I always consider her to be a really strong shooter, but she's currently at 90% shooting, which is really high. But her skiing took a really big step back this year. So, you know, she's really got to step it up, because Italy doesn't have, if there's one nation in that top group that I think doesn't have the depth, it's Italy, just because I think they're a very young nation. And I think they're still maybe 2 years away from getting to like a France level domination. So they really need athletes like Doro to keep the pressure on and support Vitozzi in that 1-2. And then hopefully you can get really strong performances in relays from Alcantaler or Passler, Camola. So hopefully she can kind of step it up after the break going into the German races. But yeah, other than that, I mean, I think Hanna Oyberg, yeah, she's right there. She's 1 weekend away from being back in the top 10. But yeah, I think it's going to be super exciting as we continue on, no matter what. Just looking at Marketa Davidova too, looks like her shooting is down this year. Last year she was an 87% shooter. This year she's at 80 percent. So she's lost a lot, actually a little bit faster on the skis even. So really her lack of performance this year comes more from the shooting percentage, which is interesting. Okay, but we switch it over to the men's side. And yeah, when you look at that, when you look at the standings on Real Biathlon, it seems like it's Norwegian dominance because they have all of the top five. Yeah, they have the first five and then seventh. Philip Narvath is the only one in there ruining the perfect flower ceremony. But it really hasn't been that way. I mean, yeah, in Lenzerheide, they had a really good weekend. There's a clip of like all the four top Norwegian guys tucking down a hill together. But like Sebastian Samuelsson, he missed a lot of racing due to COVID. Germany just absolutely annihilated the men's sprint in Lenzerheide, but then they just couldn't back it up with a good pursuit. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been as dominant as the standings make it seem. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think the Norwegian bad days are just slightly better than everybody else's bad days, and that's why we see Norway stacking the top. But seeing Germany competitive with not just a couple guys, but with four, sometimes five guys. I mean, they have seven men in the top 30, which is, I think, just one shy of Norway. And I don't think anyone would have seen that happening at this stage in the season. And it'll be pretty exciting for, like, we talked about the women's relays, but same story on the men's side, where you could have, I don't know if Norway is kind of untouchable in the relays, but Germany could put down a pretty good fight.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny too, like ranked 26th right now, Philip Horn. That dude was, he missed a lot of the World Cup due to having to be on the IBU Cup because they just don't have, I think Germany has five or maybe six start spots on the World Cup. And he was on the IBU Cup for Kontiolahti and Idris, so the first two weekends of the year, and then just bumps up due to illness, I think, bumps up to the World Cup and just immediately from no points to 115 points jumps himself into the top 30 with two really good races. So that also just kind of shows you the depth that Germany is developing, maybe not as deep or as good at the highest level. Like, you know, they don't have Johannes and Tarje, but I mean, between Benny Doll, who was the yellow bib wearer, Kuhn wore the yellow bib early in the season. Narvath, was he wearing a yellow bib? I forget. But yeah, I mean, they're quickly establishing themselves as the only nation that can stand up against Norway, because where the heck is France? I mean, Jacqueline had his 15 minutes of fame in the mass start until he just absolutely gassed himself on the third lap. He's currently sitting 18th overall. Haven't seen a lick from Quentin Fillon-Maillet, even though he's in 14th overall. Good start for Eric Perreault, honestly, age 22, getting his first full season on the World Cup, raced every stage in the first trimester, and now he's 16th overall, and Cloud is 20th. So France has four people in the top 20, but they don't have, you need that standout, that, like, you know, that almost sure bet athlete to be like, okay, you're going to be my anchor leg, go head to head with Bo and beat him. And, you know, they don't have that. I think Sweden has that. I think Dole could be that for Germany on the right day. I think he's just maybe a little bit too inconsistent to, you know, to be that every day. So you kind of have to cross your fingers you're going to get that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, where the heck has France been this year?
I could not tell you. And we talked about this a little bit in our preseason podcast, where the French team kind of had a lot of question marks surrounding it. And I wonder if this is just still working out the kinks, or, you know, whatever the system is in place now is just not working. Maybe they'll all go home for Christmas break, figure some stuff out as a team and individually, and come back and we'll see them competitive as we've seen them in the past, but I don't think they're feeling too good about where they're sitting right now in the overall standings.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at team stats and team results, like how teams are doing as a whole. And in general, France is not doing too much worse than they were last year. If anything, their ski speed has dropped a little bit against the top 10, but that is probably more just to show, like, I don't know, maybe how much Norway and those other top 10 athletes are sort of pulling away from the field. But against like the average skier, their ski speed has not dropped at all. Their shooting times got a lot faster this year and their hit percentage is the same, but yeah, they're still having a hard time cracking the top 10. But I was just looking at Quentin Fillon-Maillet to be like, hey, what's he been up to this year? His shooting is way down from last year. So you can't even say that it's like the skis or, with all this new non-fluoro stuff, like they keep missing the wax or whatever. His shooting percentage is down 5% this year. And that's also, he's shooting 78%. It's down 10% in the prone. Last year, he was 88% in prone. This right now, he's 78%. So he's guaranteed at least one miss, at least one extra miss in the prone right now as compared to last year. So maybe, I mean, it's kind of hard to do on the fly, but if you go through all his results and add one more hit to all of his performances this year, maybe he starts to crack the top 10 a little bit more. But yeah, so far he has not had many stellar races. As I say that, he does have 9th, 8th, 6th, 9th place in Östersund, but a couple really bad races, 17th in the mass start, 18th in the sprint in Hochfilzen, 42nd in the season opener. So it's those kind of results where you're getting like 42nd, that's zero points, because points stop at 40. So you can't have 0 point days if you want to be fighting for the overall or fighting for the top 10. So you got to wipe those off your plate. Mm-hmm. But
in those eighth, ninth places, are by no means bad results, but for Fillon-Maillet's standard, and I think where he hopes to be, those are still not really ideal race results for him. And hopefully we can see him get back to competing for the podium and, hitting some targets, because, he makes biathlon more exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. What about Seb Samuelson? Unfortunately, he had to, miss pretty much all of Lenzerheide and maybe some of Hochfilzen, if I recall correctly, due to COVID. So currently, overall, he's ranked 10th, but do you think he has what it takes to continue to fight in the top three, assuming he doesn't miss any more time?
I think so. Right now, he's the fastest male skier on the World Cup. His ski speed is up.
Huge.
Immensely big. I'm sorry, I was trying to figure out the math there, but it's up.
Yeah, it's huge. Like 1.5. Like he's up like 1.5% right now, which is absurd.
Which is crazy, considering he was already one of the fastest skiers on the World Cup. Yeah. But what's interesting is that his shooting percentages is down, not a ton, but it is down from last year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because he's skiing faster, that's what he focused on training over the summer and the fall, but if he can keep skiing as fast as he is and hitting enough targets, I think he can easily compete for the top three in the overall.
Yeah. Every race so far he's been in the top 10. Actually, his worst race of the season so far has been 7th place, which is, that's pretty dang good. If your worst race is the first spot out of the flower ceremony, the problem is he just missed so much time due to COVID. He missed a whole weekend of racing in Lenzerheide, so he gave up some incredible points there. I really hope Seb can come back strong and continue, because it seems like, if I recall correctly, his season always either he starts out strong and fades, or he starts off terribly and maybe gets strong towards the end. I feel like we haven't seen a full consistent season from him. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it seems like he's more of like a peaker. He's like a guy who comes to life at world champs or for like a really specific, you know, weekend in Östersund or something. But then for the rest of the season, you know, you can really more count on him as being like a top 20 guy. So hopefully he can maintain this momentum and stay in that top 10, because those points add up, especially with the new point system.
And last year we saw, you know, he was really the only one that was able to beat Johannes Tingis Bo, especially at World Champs in that mass start. And I was really excited that he was, like you said, his worst result was seventh, which is crazy to think that you can go however many races they did and the worst you finished was seventh. And, you know, you were disappointed you didn't make the flower ceremony because you had every other race.
Mm-hmm.
I think him knowing that he can beat Johannes Tingis Bo in his head too is going to be a huge factor for any head-to-head race they do, even sprints or individuals. Knowing that he can do it and he has done it before is going to go so far for him.
Yeah. All right, last one I want to ask you about. What do you think about Sebastian Stalder? Because I don't want to toot my own horn here, and it's way too early to say I told you so. But I had him as a biathlete that you should watch, you know, in my early season preview. But currently Stalder is leading the charge for the Swiss, which a lot of people would have said, oh, it's going to be Hartwig, but it's actually Sebastian Stalder. And he's currently ranked 17th overall. I think it's really cool to see him have a good start to the season. And then also good races in Lenzerheide in front of the home crowd. Like, he was totally getting the crowd going with his good shooting.
Mm-hmm. It's always fun to see when an athlete racing at home succeeds, especially on the range. The crowd gets going behind him too. But in terms of his success, it's definitely been on the range, shooting 92%. And his prone and standing are really, really consistent with that average, not that far off. And his ski speed has increased slowly season by season. And he's skiing roughly average for the World Cup field, right, just about smack dab in the middle. But if he keeps shooting as well as he does and keeps carrying momentum, and maybe if Hartweg gets going a little bit, kind of boost the Swiss morale. I know the women have been having success lately, but I think he could continue his success, and especially in the individuals, I think that's his best chance of making the podium, just because his shooting has been so good so far.
And you know what's funny is, like, I look at a guy like Stalder, and he doesn't excite me as much as Hartwig. Maybe because Hartwig has a little bit more like ego to him, and he's like, you know, same kind of like with Tommy Giacomel of, like, you know, having a little bit of pizzazz. Stalder seems just a little bit more like, no, you know, show up, do my job, get a quality result, and then over time the points add up. I'm looking at his results here. I mean, okay, he came in fifth in the very first race of the year. Really good start to the season with a couple more top 20s in Östersund. But the rest of his races, 30th in the sprint in Hochfilzen, and then with really good shooting, moved up to 17th. 42nd in the sprint in Lenzerheide with really good shooting, moved up to 24th. Qualified for the mass start and comes in 20th. Like, those results they're not outstanding, but they're quality. And that's, you know, you're not going to win the overall with that. But if you can continue to maintain quality, he's going to be sitting in a really good spot at the end of the year. And like I said, again, he's sitting 17th right now. Maintain that quality, I bet he cracks the top 15, at least at one point, maybe by the end of the year. And a lot of that comes from his good shooting really helps him maintain that consistency. So I don't know. I feel like he's a little bit of like he could be like a good guide for maybe the US men's team of like, no, this guy's having an incredible season, and he's not doing it with flashy results. He's doing it with just quality, consistent results. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All right, spare round. How would you rate the U.S. season so far on a scale of 1 to 10? 10 being awesome, 1 being terrible.
I would give it a solid 6. What about you?
Yeah, I'm around the same. I'm like a 5 or 6 because they've had some good flashes of excitement, I would say. Deidre, obviously, qualifying for the mass start, coming in 8th place in the sprint. Really exciting. But yeah, the guys, a little flat, but also I know that there's been a ton of illness in the team, like so much sickness, so much DNSing. Yeah, it's been frustrating because I feel like we haven't seen the team at full strength yet due to the illness. You know what I mean?
I think on the men's side, that's been the story, and the only knock you can have on them is that they haven't been healthy enough to consistently race, especially as a collective. I know Vincent was brought up from the IBU Cup and made the pursuit in Lenzerheide, which was super awesome to see.
Yeah, great for him.
And 3 men qualifying for the pursuit with, Jake not being able to start the pursuit. I think they're trending in the right direction when they're able to race. I think they just got to get healthy, and we don't know how they are, how competitive they are right now, just because of that health factor. So I think the big thing for them is just get healthy, be able to put some races together consistently.
Yeah, and I know on the IBU Cup as well, just having literally just been there, I know that staying healthy has been an issue there as well. So hopefully it's just sort of that like early season travel bug. Everyone's immune systems are getting back into the rhythm of being on the road and living out of a suitcase in close quarters. And we're not the only team to suffer with COVID too. I mean, literally twice now it's happened that the yellow bib wearer has had to sit out a race because of COVID and illness. So hopefully, yeah, after the break and after the new year, team is back to full strength. But yeah, and then a couple other exciting things to look forward to. If the men's team can get back to full health, then hopefully, they can only go upwards from there. I don't think we've seen the best from Campbell yet. As the new American on the team, obviously Vincent, really great start, but Maxime had a great start as well. Sean's had some good results. Jake, decent results. Like, I think they're all capable of much more. And then on the women's side too, we have Chloe Levins and Tara Garrity-Motes will be rejoining the international scene after their qualification in Craftsbury this year. So they'll be coming back, probably not straight to the World Cup, but definitely in IBU events. And then maybe eventually back to the World Cup, and that will really bolster up the women's team as well. After they lost some time due to illness and Tara joining the guard and everything. So yeah, I think the future is bright for the US team. So hopefully it will be a really good big 3 trimester after the new year.
Mm-hmm. I think one quick thing before we finish. I don't know if we got to talk about this yet in our podcast earlier this season, but you mentioned Maxime, and I think he deserves a shout out for his relay performance and Östersund tagging off in 3rd. I think he's kind of been the golden boy for the US that we've been waiting to see reach that competitive World Cup level since Sean, and seeing him do that right out of the gate in the season was absolutely incredible to see, and I can't wait to see what he does the rest of the season.
Yeah, that was super exciting, and it's cool too, even though, yeah, it was just a relay and it was just one leg, like for him to be able to have to ski at the pace of whoever else was in his leg, I think like Phil Maillet, whoever for Norway, like just the fact that he's up there and he's got to fight and keep the pace with those top athletes. It's like, all right, dude, like this was a taste of the expectation at the World Cup. Cause you get experience for racing at the World Cup. And then there's experience for being literally head to head with some of the biggest names in our sport. That's just like experience with a cherry on top. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So hopefully he can take that and be like, you know, apply that, that pace and that pressure and that, that expectation into a sprint race. And then who knows, maybe pop an incredible sprint result. That'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. But all right. There we go. There's the podcast. I really hope, fingers crossed, that we can be more consistent. So I apologize for all those who've been asking when's the next podcast coming out. But yeah, yeah, you can find this podcast on YouTube, on any podcast platform like Spotify, Apple Music, wherever else you listen to your podcasts. But yeah, until next time, we'll see you.